Good evening. Thank you for being here for our first basic Buddhist teachings since January. And I've had an entire month to prepare. And so, of course, I was asking Sokazan what to talk about 5 minutes ago. I have been studying a lot. I've been reading a tremendous amount of material. And what I'd like to talk about tonight, I have some trepidation about talking about. And so I would ask that if you have questions, it's a difficult area to articulate. It's an area that's been coming up very strongly in my practice, particularly over this last year. And there's two aspects I'd like to start with in discussing. A lot of what I'd like to talk about is being a student on the Buddhist path. What it means to be a student on the Buddhist path and how that really differs from how we function as students to our relative world of careers and skills and education and learning how to be a better partner, how to be a better parent. The first thing I wanted to read to you, and then I had one thing I wanted to share with you. And this comes out of an exchange between Milarepa and one of his primary disciples, Rechungpa. Don't worry, Chisho, I'm not going to talk about Tantra tonight. but in Vajrayana Buddhism, it's very common for a teacher to be an emanation of somebody or of something. The most familiar one is His Holiness the Dalai Lama being considered an emanation or an incarnation of Avalokiteshvara. Khandro Rinpoche is considered an emanation of Machig Labdronma. And so Rechungpa asks Milarepa, he says, "Whose manifestation are you?" And Milarepa said, "I don't know. I could be the manifestation of all three lower realms put together. But if you think I am Vajradhara, you will receive the blessings as if I'm Vajradhara." So for those of you that aren't familiar, the three lower realms would be the hell realm, the hungry ghost realm, and the animal realm. And Milarepa is saying, "I don't know. I have no idea who I am. But I could be the combination of these three terrible, fighting, greedy, ignorant beings. But if you think that I'm the Buddha, that's the blessings you'll receive." And I wanted to share something that happened to me about a week ago. I had a dream. And those of you that know me know I'm very unimaginative. I'm not a creative student. I have no visual consciousness in the sense of imagination. So if you say something and Sokazan says, "Imagine this," it usually can't. It's a strange area for me. But I dream a lot. I have a lot of peculiar dreams, and they don't really point to anything, but they're enjoyable. But this one hit pretty hard. And I was in the Hojo with Sokazan. And believe it or not, I've been fighting with Sokazan a little bit more. The hair on my neck is up more. Is that the hackles? Is that like a dog's hackles are up? Just a bit more angsty. And in the dream, Sokazan said something that was wrong. It was incorrect. He's the Buddha. He would never say something wrong. And I took a deep breath in. And you know what comes after the deep breath in? It usually comes with a finger. Oh. Before the breath could come out, there was a flash of something. And I fell to the floor in prostrations. What is difficult about being a student on the Buddha's path is that if we take a vow as tremendous as the Bodhisattva vow, sometimes it's called the vow that transcends karma, the vow to liberate all sentient beings in all times and all directions without exception, to prioritize the well-being of others. That trap of logic is so seductive to saying that we don't have to do that, that it was a nice vow to take, but in actuality, you don't deserve my kindness. I don't have to receive this. I don't have to work with this. And to consider as students that there isn't any given situation that isn't exposing our fixation, our territoriality. But it's our emotions that we get pulled into that make us think that we don't actually have to look at that we actually can turn the tables and say, I don't have to receive my own confusion because in actuality, you are also confused. Or to think that the misunderstanding of somebody else is an excuse not to look at our own confusion instead of seeing that no matter how antagonistic, no matter how incorrect, no matter how irrational, what is receiving it, in particular in the context of the container that we call the path of Buddhism, and those very strong forms of relating to a teacher, relating to the Sangha, that's a much more difficult one, relating to the Dharma, relating to the Buddha, that the first place we should look is what is it that's being triggered? So it's easy to go into, actually, Sokozan, you misunderstood. Actually, Mozuku, it wasn't that, it was this. Instead of seeing the instant that happens, we have an impulse. We have an impulse to react, not respond. We have an impulse to react out of fear of being wrong, of looking wrong. It happened to me today. Somebody said I was messing with the computer in White Tara, and I was like, no, I wasn't. I didn't do it. And it's embarrassing. I'm just waiting for someone to, Chie-san, did you turn the computer off? Oh, I really didn't. But this aspect of the path is only going to get harder. Because when we first come onto the path, there is a quality of softness. We are already going through so much difficulty when we come to the path. Most of us, the negativity that gets us on the path is more than enough fuel for us to look at. But as we become more and more comfortable on the path, as we become more confident relatively with the surroundings and the language, the vocabulary, the dress, the chanting, the forms. Sometimes it takes a little more intentional disruption on the part of the teacher. And intentional not being that it's planned, but intentional in that I think Sokozan says, sometimes I have to come after you because you don't let me all the time. Like, I don't give him a reason to. So sometimes it just comes out of nowhere and it's. And so the type of devotion we have on the path is not a metaphysical devotion necessarily, but to actually consider how everything arising in front of you is a form of generosity. And while the relative situation may be that we're completely justified in fighting, we're completely justified in rejecting, validating, as soon as we do that, we say, I don't actually want to receive this situation. It's very difficult to fight, but also say, but I'm also receiving maybe a little bit. But only after we let others know that we get a credential out of it. So I was really moved by this exchange between Rechungpa and Milarepa, that Milarepa, this considered one of the greatest sages of Tibetan Buddhism, saying, I don't know who I am. And in a sense, it doesn't matter who I am. It's the intention of the student that. I am going to receive the Buddha moment by moment by moment. And if we can even begin to consider that attitude, you can't create it, you can't just imitate it, that in the midst of being attacked or humiliated, that all of a sudden you're just going to be like, well, thank you, Buddha. But to just flash on that, to look deeply at the pain it causes us because of the fixation, the territoriality that we try to maintain. And then to have it show up mirrored in this dream that I needed to have. And again, I don't make meaning out of the dream. I'm not saying there was some awakening that occurred, but it just that can occur in a dream, then it can occur in reality. That I, before I turn the inhale into an exhale, I could even consciously just bow to the situation and thank it. Thank you for showing me this. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to receive my own negativity for the benefit of others. So to be a student of this path is difficult. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to say that I'm going to take an attitude of receiving the world, going to take the attitude of receiving my mind. I'm going to take the attitude of receiving the suffering of everything. But that's not strategized through logic. It's a radical form of reception that doesn't get to have any form of gatekeeper. That's a valid thing to receive. That's an invalid thing to receive. It just sucks. And yet, at the same time, the type of relationship we can begin to have with the world is not seeing enemies, not seeing adversaries. And I would say to some extent, I spent some time in adversarial territory this week. That Sokaran and I went to a wonderful high school of very traditional Christian students. We prayed four times while we were at school. We were prayed for. I don't recall how that prayer went, but they prayed for the Buddhists, and the intention was kind. But it's easy to have an adversarial attitude of, what are you doing? Don't talk down to me. You got your head up your ass with your beliefs. So that attitude that I'm doing the same thing they're doing, but I think I'm right in doing it, instead of the gratitude of, you know, you invited me into the space. And whether it's beneficial to those that we sat in front of, it can still be beneficial to me. And then today we spent some time at the Air National Guard base here in town and heard about the drones are flying all over the world. And it was painful. It was hard. It was difficult. I think both of us had a hard time being there as the only non-Protestant religious representatives. We prayed, and I'm sure we were prayed for. But the Buddhist is not looking to take a position where we get to be right, where we get to stand out, where we get credentialed for our understanding, but to be in that world, to be in the midst of going through a security checkpoint and seeing the room where all the drones are flying out of, and the cybersecurity area, and the guys carrying their guns, and where they used to store the bombs. That's not a world we get to reject. So I was appreciative of this exchange and appreciative of my teacher that sometimes I have to remember that I'm not here to understand in a sense of being able to correct, but I'm here to understand in the sense of, if there is confusion arising in all of its forms, that's mine. I get to receive that. So are there any questions about this idea of functioning as a student on the path, a student of Buddhism, a student of Sokuzans? Unyo.
Unyoba, I think you just said something to the effect that we get to receive the confusion.
Yes.
How do we know it's confusion, not wisdom, or something else?
The clever answer would be to say they're the same thing, but I don't know that. If it's moving and if you think it has thingness, then it's confusion. If it is arising as phenomena, if it is arising as sight, smell, taste, sound, touch, and mind, and you think that it has substance, substance to either go to war with, or substance to possess, or substance to ignore, then there's some quality of confusion. If we see it as separate from ourselves, there's some quality of confusion arising. It doesn't have to show up in the traditional sense of not knowing, like, I'm confused, I'm so confused right now. Certainty is another form of confusion. It's just much more seductive. We actually like to play into that or buy into that. So it's the willingness to receive everything that arises. And I don't know how to articulate this more clearly, but we don't have to receive it as content. And that means that we don't just have to receive it by processing it through our thoughts, through analyzing it, through putting it into some sort of category, that the reception does not it doesn't require it to make sense. It doesn't require it for it to have a position. To me, it's more about that attitude, just like Milarepa said to Rachangpa, if you think I'm the Buddha, then you receive the blessings of the Buddha. So it's really the attitude of Rachangpa, the attitude that this is, everything's worthy of veneration.
When you mind, so it, how would you describe wisdom then?
I don't know that I would or that I could. And I feel that that can be another seductive pull of the path, is that we're trying to get away from confusion into wisdom. And I think the best that we can start with is this, again, and I would call it a radical attitude, a radical intention, that we're not looking for content. We're not looking to identify wisdom as content or as discriminated from something else, but the totality, the complete openness, the situation, you could say, is the wisdom. But we can't see that because of how we compartmentalize it. And so the best thing for some of us that we can do is just start with flashing an idea of appreciation.
When you're buying, I think you just said something to the effect that certainty can be seductive. But when I listen to Sogazan, and at times when I hear your teaching, there's a certainty about it where it looks like Sogazan would give his life for it. He said that to me, I'd give my life for you.
And
is that not certainty? And how is that seductive?
That's a teaching. I think that's, for me, from my experiences, that everything offered is intended to encourage the student to keep going. And the misunderstanding is to think that there needs to be follow through or substance behind that. Prove it. Show it to me. Do it then. Really? You're going to do that for me? Getting back into that idea of proof. Sokozan asked me to try to think of some koans, some cases from Blue Quillip Records, and one just finally came up. A lot of us are familiar with this koan of what was Bodhidharma's intention coming from the West? And a student went to his teacher and said, what was Bodhidharma's intention in coming from the West? And the teacher replied, it doesn't matter. What's your intention? So I look to Sokozan for inspiration, but I'm not necessarily looking, does he follow through? Because that is falling right back into needing a teacher to perform in a particular way. And for me, I have no idea who or what Sokozan is, but I can work with my intention. I know he's my teacher, but I sometimes notice how any one of us tend to go in either direction of trying to undermine through logic or to hyper-idealize. And both of them, you could say, creates a barrier between the student and the teacher. So coming to the intention for me is I may still take a big breath in, but I probably should just bow.
Shodo bowing. How might we practice that prostration, like that example, without literally prostrating, bowing?
You could reflect on the vow you've taken every day, and you could reflect on how that may arise as an intention towards the world. I think it's similar to the way we work with the four dharmas, the four reminders, that you might reflect on that. So it's going to show up very differently for each of us. And it may show up in a more active form. It's showing up in a very active form for me right now, but I don't feel that it's appropriate to even share that, because then it's like, wow, that sounds good. It's showing up out of my inspiration and my time with Sokozan. So for some of you, this talk is not going to be helpful. It's not what's showing up for you in your practice. That's not incorrect. It's not like you're missing something or you're not ready for it. That's what's difficult about talking about something like this. It has a degree of subjectivity. It has perhaps an enormous degree of subjectivity. But I think it can be helpful to reflect on that intention, that you have taken a vow that is said to transcend karma, where you don't get to come out on top.
In in a situation where from the outside it might look like I'm putting someone else first or trying to be kind to them. But in reality, it feels like I'm just trying to placate the situation so that I don't have to feel uncomfortable. What would actually responding out of the vow look like in that?
The way I understand that is that just you're giving your awareness to that situation, because to create an action to artificially modify that, again, it just muddies the water further. So all of that arises very spontaneously. It's a very impulsively, but still to further convolute the situation by trying to draw it closer to being a bodhisattva only just takes us further into our concepts about it. So we endeavor to continue to give our awareness to that. I think there's a lot of kindness in that, the willingness to be insane, the willingness to see the games we play, the pettiness that arises. It comes back. There's another one about Kueshan said to his student Yangshan, "I don't tell you what to do, I just tell you to see clearly." He refused to prescribe activity for Yangshan. He just told his student, just see clearly. And what do you see clearly? You see the confusion, you see the movement as arises in consciousness, and you endeavor to do nothing with it. You endeavor to just see it and notice how it finds its own fuel, or it runs out of fuel on its own. But that doesn't happen if we go in there and try to get it to align with some sort of idealization of a true bodhisattva, a true practitioner. It is it's quite a vulnerable place to be in, because all of this happens without your permission. But then the path also comes back and says, not only did that happen without your permission, but the path isn't giving you permission to further act on it. The teacher's not giving you further permission to act on it. And that being said, of course, situationally he does. And I'm sure you've had the worst. Sokazan comes and says, yeah, why, you could try this. Why don't you do that? But the primary situation is to endeavor to see it clearly as it shows up. Yunlong
Bowie. The kind of student that you're describing almost has a fruitional quality to my ear. It seems like there would have to be some kind of revolution at the basis already in order to receive the way you're talking about receiving. So in the meantime, how can we work with intention when it's almost like a kind of faking it? That makes sense.
It would be personal, but you might experiment with faking it a little bit. You might actually see how nauseating that feels, and what is it that's resisting that? You know, what position do you feel is so solid, so real, and so valid that faking it makes you want to vomit? So it's not about faking it till you make it. It's not about faking it so you look better, but it puts a type of tension on it that's not always there when we just justify, well, this is sincerity. This is being genuine. I can't do anything differently than this. So putting a little bit of pressure on that might be something to do. Or the tension doesn't have to come in activity. It could just come conceptually to just flash on, how is this generosity? How could this possibly be generosity? So pretty personal.
Thank you. In your own practice, have you experienced or noticed any fluctuation or transition between a general and a specific intention?
If I'm following your question, I would say yes, my idealization is a general intention. I have all sorts of just wide sweeping fruitional intentions, but it is in each given situation when I feel most threatened or challenged that I have to actually reflect on, is that really my intention? And can I actually work with that when it's being challenged in the immediate situation? And so those come up all the time, especially if you're living in community, times where you're very patience or your understanding or your standards are challenged and you're unable to just leave. And you're still close enough to know what that is. I have no doubt. It's not like, oh, I'm free of it now. It's like, no, still looking at that. So the specificity shows up when something actually shows up that you think did something wrong, transgressed, a transgression. Further questions this evening?
Sean Yu bowing.
Sean Yu.
Eventually, does the kind of personal relationship between student and teacher have to be put aside to receive the teachings? Bowing.
What do you mean? What aspect? What do you mean with the personal relationship to the teacher?
I guess an example would be friendship.
Mm.
It can be a lot of different things, though. Bowing.
Nothing has to be put aside. The situation will dictate it as it needs to show up, but we need to be careful about the standards we hold, because a friendship still has a certain type of standard we want to maintain. My relationship to Sokozan has shifted dramatically in the 13, 14 years I've known him. And something I always felt a little sad about, and I maybe am lucky now, is that I've never been a student that's elicited a lot of excitement out of Sokozan as far as common interests, like art. Like, he can talk about art with Kayun a lot or different things like that. But the intimacy I've shared with Sokozan is unique in its own way. So there's just not really any standard that can be held to in that.
Baseball.
Yeah. Baseball. Sokozan loves sports balls. Footballs, baseballs, NASCAR balls. he actually was one of only, I think, four people at the monastery that ended up finishing the entire Super Bowl. I was not one of them. He watched the whole thing and enjoyed it, I think. He said he really enjoyed it. Yeah. You can enjoy the teacher in all the forms that it shows up in, but we have to have a willingness to also receive the teacher in all the forms that it shows up in. You don't have to. You could leave, too.
Sean Yu bowing. So I tend to have this goal or romanticize this idea of receiving teachings as this arena that has no self and other. And is that a misunderstanding?
Yeah, because why would you need to receive teachings in that case? You're receiving those teachings right now. You're receiving those teachings when you come to Dharma talks, when you have Dokusan. I think that's what's been a little embarrassing to me, is that there's this idea that there's some hidden teaching we're waiting for, that there's some secret that's yet to be revealed that wasn't revealed the first time words, you know, came out of Sokozan's mouth and we heard them. That was something in the Mahanibbana Sutta that the Buddha kind of scolded Ananda on, where like Ananda's like, what's your final secret teaching? And it was probably stated much more articulately than that, or eloquently than that. And the Buddha's like, what are you talking about? I gave you everything and I don't have anything left. There's no final teaching for you. And so make sure that we look at, are we looking for some secret message or something, instead of seeing that the generosity is only impeded by our willingness to receive. It's not impeded by the giver. You know, the totality is always given.
Sean Yu bowing. How do I relate to the teacher? Bowing.
Well, how is it showing up right now?
I don't know what to say. Not to you, but to the teacher. Kind of a stagnant energy.
Just continue to put yourself in a position to receive the teachings as much as possible. Continue to put yourself in a position where you expose yourself through questions, through being present, through driving up here when you're able to. I know it's not possible for everybody. It's not easy to get here. But I do feel that that's really valuable to be in the presence of not only Sokozan, but this Soka Koji Sangha. And it's not to say that if you can't, that you're at a disadvantage. But if that's an option to do that, I was reading by a Tibetan master named Jime Lingpa. I think he was in 18th century. I don't recall exactly where he fell in, but he was giving these list of things to increase devotion. And one of them was the chores of samsara never end. That some of us have this idea that when the conditions are right, I'll practice. When I finally get done with this, then I will practice. And I shared this story today, and it's like I worked for an incarnation of Jingmei Lingpa on a farm, and her name was Shirley. And she's a farmer. And there is a complete culture to someone who runs a farm. And she said to me one day, I was working in the fields, she just didn't say much at all. And she just said, why don't you slow down a little bit? You're never going to finish the chores on a farm. And that was like that was my first introduction to Zen, maybe. As a teenager. And here I am, 15, 20 years later, and reading Jingmei Lingpa saying, you never finish the chores of samsara. And that's not to say we can just drop our worldly responsibilities and just devote ourselves to practice entirely. I think that would be a misunderstanding too. But if we have inspiration to practice, don't wait for the conditions to align so that we can express that inspiration, that we should take advantage of that now. Death comes without warning, and you will never, ever complete the tasks of samsara. Never. They just don't end. Isn't that kind of incredible? Up to the moment we die, we will probably still be thinking about what we need to get done. So he said, practice now. Come here when you can. Nathan.
What can help us realize that our convictions are really confusion?
You could bring those up specifically with, for the time being is functioning as your teacher. I don't know how that looks personally, but I know that one of the core aspects of Buddhism, to me, in a sense that something that makes Buddhism is this idea of dependent origination. Not that we can deconstruct what appears to be solid, but we can reflect on how the Buddha taught that everything is compounded and therefore is subject to dissolution. And Sokozan talks about this in every talk that he gives. So we could look at those convictions and we could actually reflect on the dependent nature, that you can't actually find the core of that conviction. You just start to find pieces that start to fall apart that are in and of themselves insubstantial, but they give the illusion of substantiality when they come together. Or as Sokozan says, just giving the awareness as thoroughly as possible to the apparent solidity. But I think looking at that idea of dependent origination, reflecting on that we necessarily understand it step by step, link by link. But there's something to that, to considering that.
So great, bowing. What is it about relatively saying I am right that is ultimately incorrect? Bowing.
No, I don't know. I don't know if I can speak to ultimate anything. But the presumption is again the solidity of self and others, that there's something substantial or enduring enough that you can take credit for it, or that your small part that you played is enough to take credit for the whole thing. It just come back to, how much does it matter? What do we gain? What is it that we actually feel that we possess through being the one that knew. I can't, I can say that knowing that, that I can't do that entirely. I can say that knowing that this is something I struggle with, because the way I can process things, it's pretty clear. I can follow a line of thought. Just one more story tonight. I had, because it can be really enjoyable too, if you can soften a little bit. And as some of you know, there's a couple of mice at Black Stag, a couple. And I came over one day, and so because I wanted to build a mouse trap. And he had mouse cubes, and he had all sorts of very tried and true things. And instead, we took a Rubbermaid tote, and we started hacking it to pieces. And I think there was a string in it, and then maybe a toilet paper roll. And the idea was that they would come up this ramp, and they would go out this line, and they would slip and fall into this Rubbermaid. And like it was so much fun, because I was just so like. Like I can't see it, and he's just describing all these things we could do, but my mind's like, this isn't going, why would we do this? We have 20 of these mouse cubes, they work, and here we are. And when I just was able to do it, it didn't matter, and it never caught a single mouse, and that is entirely beside the point. To me, it was entirely beside the point. So there's a fun example of when we can, it's an easier situation where you're not so, I could have said, so Kazan, why would you do that? We have mouse cubes. We have these little traps, and those work really well. You've caught a couple of mice in them. It's harder when we feel it's more personal. It's harder when it's so hard, and then it's embarrassing when we see how personal we take it. You know, I can give you example after example. I did the exact opposite. The Chinese book.
About it,
humiliating. I was able to bite through half my tongue after the first outburst. Well, but what was that? What does it matter if we ever figure out how to use this book? The dream book, a lot of book examples. And there's the richness of the teaching is when you see it. Does it matter if we come to fruition, if it produces a result? Because the results, as temporary as the proceedings. So it's not something that we can come to easily. It's not something we can just implement conceptually, that we may have to embarrass ourselves over and over and over again. But if you're lucky, maybe you'll get a chance to build a mousetrap.